morning, everyone, and welcome to Wealthy Radio. I'm Deborah Owens, and tonight we're talking about two challenging topics that are impacting two of the largest demographics in America, millennials and boomers. First, millennials are graduating with a tremendous amount of debt. It has them postponing marriage and preventing them from purchasing their first home. And on the air with us today is Tisa Silver. She's Director of Financial Education and Financial Wellness for a leading university. And she joins us to share her strategies for tackling all this college debt. And then next, the American dream has become a nightmare for boomers as they find themselves with little retirement savings and dismal job prospects. So how do you overcome these obstacles in this dynamic economy? John Tarnoff is here to share his boomer reinvention strategies that help you turn your setbacks into successes. But of course, we want you to join in this conversation. So call Wealthy Radio at 410-319-8888. You can also send your tweets to @DeborahOwens and post your comments and questions on the Deborah Owens page. That's our Facebook page with your questions. The hashtag for our chat tonight is Wealthy Radio Chat. All that and more in just a moment.
Call all the shots, rip all the spots, rock all the rocks, top all the drops. I know you're thinking now when all the ball stops. Never home, gotta call me on the yacht. 10 years from now, we'll still be on top. Yo, I thought I told you that we won't stop. Now what you gonna do with a crew that got money much longer than yours? And a team much stronger than yours. Violate me, this'll be your day. We don't play, mess around, be DOA. Be on your way, cause it ain't enough time here. Ain't enough lime here for you to shine here. Deal with many women, but treat down's fair. And I'm bigger than the city lights down in Times Square. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wealthy Radio. I'm Deborah Owens, and as I shared earlier, the average undergraduate is coming out of college with more than $30,000 in student loan debt. And so what do you do? I mean, what do you do? In fact, I saw a survey, and it talked about the fact that millennials were feeling suicidal over student loan debts. Now, I don't say that in jest, but what's happening is millennials are having to put off home ownership. They're postponing marriage. What is a person to do? Well, I'm really excited tonight because I have someone who's joining us who has helped undergraduates pay off more than $25 million in student loan debt. She's Tisa Silver Kennedy, and she's the Director of Financial Education and Wellness at the University of Maryland, Baltimore, where she's responsible for campus-wide financial literacy programming and debt management. And it is such a joy to have Tisa on the air with us once again. How are you, Tisa?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me, Deborah.
Oh, well, it's always a pleasure. No, I mean, I think that is so scary. I don't know if you saw this survey, but I retweeted it today. It's nuts. Just to think of how much angst, you know, you get out of college, you should be feeling hopeful. You know, you've got your degree. The world is your oyster, but not so much. So let's begin there. Tisa, you are on campus. What are you seeing as it relates to financial aid and how students are approaching the whole process now?
What I see is students who really don't want to think about the debt until the end of the process, because debt is a scary thing. And if every semester you look at this growing mound of debt, it can distract you from focusing on your academics or other areas of life that are much more pleasant. So what happens is if you avoid it every semester and then at the very end you finally receive your tally of debt, it's like a huge slap in the face. and a $30,000 slap in many cases for undergraduate students. And for many of the students that I work with, they're in graduate professional programs, so their programs can end up costing them between $150,000 or $200,000 worth of student loan debt. And that's not even an extreme level for many of them. So I think that one thing that would help would be to increase awareness throughout the undergraduate experience so that it's not as much of a shock to absorb at the end, and it doesn't harm the way that people go about making life decisions in the future because it's something they've been aware of the entire time.
Well, and I just think in terms of choices, you know, Tisa, you may disagree with me, but I really feel like particularly when parents have to start looking at parent plus loans, that is a kind of a red flag and indication of affordability.
I agree with you in that a parent having to take out a plus loan means that the student has basically taken out all of their loan eligibility for the year. So that means that now you have the student who has taken on debt, you have the parent who's taken on additional debt. So that's two people in debt for one person's degree. That to me screams this is too expensive. But there are a lot of people who are making these college decisions based on the advice that any college is good for you to go to. So if I get accepted to one, it doesn't matter what the price tag is, I'm going to go. And for many parents, they might encourage their child to do the same thing. Wherever you get in, go, and we're going to make this happen. Not thinking about these thousands of dollars are going to accrue interest every single day, and that there will be a large amount waiting for them at the end of that degree if they complete.
So let's talk about if you're a student who's listening to this program, because I really want to talk to those folks who are either in school or maybe have just gotten out. And yes, they did have their head kind of in the sand, and now they have to, you know, pay the piper. So just from a strategic standpoint, explain a little bit about how the loan repayment process works. And then, you know, how do you prioritize what to tackle first?
Okay. So with loan repayment for federal student loans, students get a grace period after graduation. It's usually 6 months. Some loans have a grace period of up to 9 months. But the grace period is your time to develop your strategy for repayment. And although repayment does seem scary, the federal government has two main varieties of repayment plans depending on what's most realistic for the student. The first method of paying back loans is the balance-driven plan, and this is solely based on how much a person borrowed. So this, for example, there would be a plan that allows a person to pay the same amount of money every month for 10 years, and at the end of 10 years, the balance would be cleared. But for people who borrow larger amounts of money, sometimes that fixed plan just isn't realistic. They're not going to make enough money to repay it. So the second method of paying back loans is called the income-driven method. With the income-driven method, the payments are not only based on how much a student has borrowed, but they're based on other household characteristics, like how much the student has earned, if the student has dependents, and how the student files their taxes. And the government uses a formula that's between 10 and 15% of disposable income, and that figure ends up being the payment that a student is obligated to make each month. Now, the drawback to using some of those income-driven plans would be that if you've taken out so much debt that the payment you're making on the loan doesn't cover the interest that's accruing each month, then you're going to see your balance continue to rise because you're not attacking the principal. But if you can't afford to make a payment under the balance-driven plan, then you might not have a choice. So the first thing I would do is take a look at the overall amount that you borrowed and then look at your salary projections or any job offers that you might have, or use salary.com to see what the income potential is for a job in your field and try to get a feel for whether or not a balance-driven plan or an income-driven plan would be most realistic.
Now, and I want our callers, because I know this is a topic that many folks are interested in. I want folks to call 410-319-8888. That's 410-319-8888. In this first half, Tisa Silver, who is Director of Financial Education and Financial Wellness for the University of Maryland at Baltimore, is here and is sharing some great insights on paying back college loan debt. I mean, I was alarmed when I saw this survey just about how this debt is impacting, perspectives and just really quality of life for so many young folks who are carrying this debt. And so perhaps you're a parent who's listening to this conversation. I know I get a lot of inquiries about what to do as it relates to Parent PLUS loans. And I know I hear from so many people who are also really struggling, just trying to figure out, okay, what do I do? How do I pay off this debt? And how do I begin to, live my life, purchase a home, all the things that you typically dream of doing. And oftentimes that's why you go to college, so that you are marketable. So give us a call at 410-319-8888. That's 410-319-8888. We're talking college loan debt repayment in this first half. The phone number to call, 410-319-8888. Let's go to our first caller. Keisha, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, I have a son. He's currently a sophomore in high school. He's not in college yet. I'm hoping he gets some sort of athletic scholarship. But just in case, I'm trying to figure out what I can do now to prevent becoming one of these people in debt later on. I'm saving as much as I can, but it's not nearly enough. So what should I start applying for or do to prepare for his college tuition?
That's a good question.
Great question. First of all, let me commend you for saving, because that's a great start. The next thing I would do is to make sure that you're going to reputable sources about the cost of attendance for the colleges that your son might be interested in. What I've seen a lot is that people rely on word of mouth or what a neighbor said or a friend said about college and how expensive it is. But you really won't know how much you need to save unless you go directly to that college and examine what's called the cost of attendance. You should be able to find it online, but if you have any questions about it, you can call the college's financial aid office, and a financial aid counselor should be able to walk you through what that cost of attendance includes and how many of those items are left to your discretion. The second thing that I would do is make sure that you look for a timeline on the school's website for applying for scholarships. Definitely for private scholarships that are offered by the school. But if you plan on sending your son to a school in the state of Maryland, you want to make sure that you adhere to all of the priority deadlines for the state of Maryland. And for Maryland, you need to file that FAFSA by March 1st in order to be considered for state scholarships. So those are my two biggest tips. One is go straight to the source so that you don't have any misinformation about the potential price tag for the college. And two, make sure that you file the FAFSA as early as possible. And I'll add this one as number three. When you're completing the FAFSA, make sure that you're accurate, because if there's information in there that it's not correct, it might not match your admissions record, that could delay processing on the financial aid office side.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Absolutely. Again, the phone lines are open, 410-319-8888. If you're just joining us, I'm Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach, and on the line and helping us figure out how to navigate the whole loan repayment maze is Tisa Silver. She is she's director of financial education for University of Maryland, Baltimore. Phone lines are open, 410-319-8888. If you've got a question, we would love to hear from you. Tisa, my other question is one of the other things that I'm amazed that there are a lot of people who are working in public service that aren't aware of many of the loan forgiveness provisions. Can you talk to us a little bit about that as a strategy? And when would you consider going into a public service kind of role that may not pay as much, but maybe in the long run it would be a good trade-off?
Okay. So let's talk a bit about public service loan forgiveness. Public service loan forgiveness is actually a federal program that, on the most basic level, stipulates that a person can work in an eligible public service career while making payments on certain repayment plans for a minimum of 120 months. And after making payments for 120 months, they could have the balance of their loans forgiven tax-free. So essentially, it's a minimum of 10 years of working in public service, making sure that all your payments are made on time and in full, and the balance is supposed to be wiped away without a tax consequence. There's some people that really have a heart for service. And I'd say to students, if you know that about yourself and you know that that's the direction that you're going to take with your life, then definitely read up on public service loan forgiveness. But don't use that as a reason to attend the most expensive school possible, thinking that in the end your debt is going to be forgiven. So you have to achieve some balance of doing what you want to do with your life, but still making a wise financial decision about what school to go to that'll lead you to the degree that ultimately leads you to that public service career. It's interesting that you bring up public service loan forgiveness, because I met a woman who worked for city schools and had been in repayment for about 9 years, but no one told her about public service loan forgiveness. And as a result, she didn't make the conversion of her loans into direct loans to make them eligible for public service loan forgiveness. So this is someone who stood to have about $200,000 worth of debt forgiven if she had made one phone call to consolidate her loans and make them direct, which makes them eligible for public service loan forgiveness. So for people who are interested in public service loan forgiveness, I would say first thing to do is log into studentloans.gov. Take a look at your student loan history. As long as your loans have the word direct in front of them, that makes them eligible for public service loan forgiveness. The second thing is to look at your employment and determine whether or not your job actually falls into the category of public service. And there's plenty of information on the Department of Education's website about what makes that determination so. And the third thing is to make sure that you're paying on a repayment plan that qualifies for public service loan forgiveness. And any of the income-driven plans qualify. So those are the three main things: your type of loan, your employment, and the repayment plan that you pay under.
Yeah, and that's really what I, and let me just let, I'm going live on, I'm also going live on Periscope right now. If you're just joining in, I'm Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach. And in our first half of Wealthy Radio this evening, I'm having a conversation with Tisa Silver. She is the director, and I have to remember this, Tisa, you've been moving up here. She's the director of financial education and financial wellness at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. And I was just sharing earlier, man, I just saw this survey with the fact that people are suicidal over this college loan debt. I mean, millennials in particular are having to put off, you know, they're putting off marriage, they're putting off buying homes because they're mired in all of this debt. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can call in at 410-319-8888. That's 410-319-8888. Or you can post a question to my Facebook page, which is the Deborah Owens page. Of course, please follow me. Please follow me on Twitter. That's at Twitter. That's at Deborah Owens. And then the Deborah on Facebook, Deborah Owens page. So phone lines are open, 410-319-8888. And we're talking college loan debt. How to get out of it. Let's go to our next caller. Yeah, Donna, you're on the air. Question or comment for our guest this evening?
I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
My comment is, I guess it's more of a concern. When I run into students, people who are already in school, either in their junior year, freshman, sophomore, junior year, and some of them say they're out of they go to school out of state, they go in state, and I ask them what their majors are. I never hear any of the American students tell me their major is, you know, dentistry, medicine, you know, some of the professional engineering, whatever. It's always English, drama, music, things like that. And I'm sitting, I give a look on my face saying, so what are you going to do with that? Oh, I'm still trying to figure that out, or history. And I'm like, you're majoring in, so they're going to these expensive schools, some of them, and they're majoring in fields that they don't know what they want to do, but they're majoring in history or drama or acting. And I'm just confused on why American students major in fields that are not going to help them pay off their student debt, you know, where they can live comfortably and don't have to worry about going back home. I mean, is there a trend where the foreign students seem to go into your higher career, earning careers, and our American students seem to be go into the non-careers that they can't, they're not going to get a job when they finish, and then they have all the student loan when they go to expensive schools or mid-level expensive schools. And I wanted you to comment on it. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thank perfect. Well, Tisa, that's right in your wheelbarrow because you're at a professional a school at a university where, you know, they're dentists and doctors and all of that thing. So what are your thoughts on that?
We have a very diverse population. But I can't say that I see that as a trend with American versus foreign students, but I can say that I have talked to a lot of people who do have majors that don't have the greatest income potential and at the same time will go to the most expensive school possible, thinking that the prestige is going to help them cover that gap. And unfortunately, it won't in certain fields. So the advice that I offer to many of them is if you don't really know what you want to do with your life, you can figure that out at a community college because you can get credits that will be transferable to a traditional four-year university, and you'll still learn the same things. You'll just walk away having paid a much smaller price tag.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, too, because I think that, I call it parents wanting to create middle-class nirvana for their children, and yet if you haven't saved by the time that your child goes to, in their senior year, if you haven't created savings, then you really need to be thinking about what are some alternatives that would allow my child to go to school and be able to afford it?
And I think the community college is a great place to begin. Ultimately, I think we're going to see a lot of people shifting to that 2+2 formula where you complete an associate's degree at a community college in 2 years and then transfer to a four-year institution to finish up a bachelor's. Because the price of college, not just the tuition and fees, but the cost of actually living on campus, you know, room and board, all of those things has risen so much so that college, paying for college out of pocket just isn't realistic for many people.
Yeah, it's almost become out of reach and not necessarily such a great investment either. Mm-hmm. The phone lines are open, 410-319-8888. That's 410-319-8888. This is Wealthy Radio. I'm Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach, and I'm talking with Tisa Silver, who is head of financial wellness and financial education at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. Let's go to our next caller. Charlene, you're on the air. Whoops.
Hi.
Hi.
I was calling in reference to what I just heard the last caller say with regards to young people and, you know, the majors that they're taking. And I recently have gone into the STEM aspect of education, where it's the science, the technology, engineering, art, and math. And we're starting at the pre-K, kindergarten, first and second grade level. We've done robotics. And I think that what's happening with a lot of the young people today, industry has showed them entertainment things to get wealthy. So this is why they're going into those careers that aren't necessarily a sure shot, whereas if you go to school to be a dentist, yes, there's going to be a big financial aid bill associated with it. But like you said, when you plan out the career and the amount of time that you have to pay it back, it's one of the higher earning jobs. But, you know, it's so open now. But I think when you're starting at the young levels and as parents, if you are gearing your kids, you know, just buying regular toys, you got to buy toys with a purpose that's going to spark that interest early, where it's not just building blocks. You know, it's building blocks at the pre-K level, but when you become an adult, you're building bridges. And those are high-earning civil engineer positions. But I think the young people have just seen entertainment and music and all the glamorous, you know, MBA, all those type of careers. And that's why they want to kind of go into that field. That's what I believe.
Well, Charlene, that's a great point. Tisa, you want to comment?
No, I think it's great, and I think that as parents and teachers, it's really important for us to impress upon children the difference between reality and reality TV or what they see on television, because these things are not real. But when that's what a child sees and that message is reinforced, they think, oh, well, all I have to do is play a sport and I can be rich. Or, you know, I can just, you know, be fancy and somebody will give me a show.
And you know, it's interesting, too. What we are seeing is Technology is driving so much now, and it's almost like Moore's Law. I forgot what it was, but how many, you know, that the technology would change every 8 years. And now that's gotten even faster. And now you have artificial intelligence. You have all these technologies that at the end of the day, they really are going to impact our professions, our ability to earn a living. And the other thing is even the knowledge, right? So the knowledge is becoming even more extinct, and many of us are having to reinvent ourselves, if you will. So, Tisa Silver, please, thank you so much. Let folks know about your website, though. How can they get into contact with you, and how can they follow you?
Okay, well, I'm online at www.tisasilver.com, and I'm also on Twitter at Tisa Silver. So feel free to just mention me. I will answer any questions I can, and if I don't have an answer, I will try my best to direct you to a resource that will.
Excellent. Well, Tisa, thanks so much for coming on Wealthy Radio this evening.
Thanks, Deborah.
Oh, my pleasure. Always a pleasure. Well, don't go anywhere, because we've tackled the millennials, and up next are the boomers. So here it is, the American dream. You thought you would have that career and for life and that pension? Not so much. So coming up in our next half, we're going to be talking about what you need to do to turn your setbacks into successes. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be right back.
Remember, listen as your day unfolds. Challenge what the future holds.
Payback is a thing you got to see. Hell, never do any damn thing to me. Change.
Yes,
told me they had it all arranged. They hand me down, that's the bank. And now you're punk. You got to get ready for the big payback.
The big payback.
That's where I land. Oh, for the big payback.
Oh, yeah. So I had to have a little boomer music, but that may have been a little earlier than boomer. Hey, everybody, I'm Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach. Welcome to Wealthy Radio. And we've been talking about two of the most challenging topics for two of the largest demographics. We started out with millennials, just talking about what they're tackling, some of their challenges just around college loan debt. And in this second half, we're going to shift. We're going to shift to the other large demographic, and that's boomers. And boomers are finding it tough because many of them felt like I did, if you will, that I'd have a career for life and I'd have this huge pension and all would be right with the world. But hey, what we're finding is that the economy has changed, and it's been changing for years, and many folks just weren't prepared. And so I'm really, really excited to have on in the second half John Tarnoff. He's a reinvention career coach. He provides career counseling for baby boomers and late career professionals, and he is looking to defy ageism. And his methodology is captured in his 2017 Amazon number one best-selling book, Boomer Reinvention, How to Create Your Dream Career Over 50, a modular, practical, accessible program of 5 steps and 23 underlying career strategies. And the other interesting thing about John is he was fired 39% over the course of his 40-year career. He's a former Los Angeles-based entertainment and industry executives. And John, I'm so glad to have you on Wealthy Radio to help us turn our setbacks into successes. So thank you for coming on Wealthy Radio this evening.
Well, thank you, Deborah. It's great to be with you.
Great to be with you as well. So talk to us a little bit about what was the genesis of this idea about boomer reinvention, and how did you find yourself coaching boomers to tackle some of these challenges that they're facing.
Right. Well, this has been something of a crazy process for me. As you mentioned in your intro, I was a movie industry executive for about 35 years in total. But in the middle of that process, or towards the end of it, around the turn of the century, after the bursting of the dot-com bubble, I had a startup in the bubble, and I really, you know, woke up in 2001 and had no idea what I was going to do in my career. I felt like I couldn't go backward, that the kind of jobs that I had had in the movie business previously, I was not up for any longer. And I don't even think I really wanted to do those jobs anymore, but I didn't know where I was going to go moving forward. So I decided to go back to school. I earned a master's degree in spiritual psychology.
Oh, my.
Yep.
That was a bit off the beaten path, right?
Well, it was, but it was really a self-exploration process, and I think it's relevant to a lot of us who are trying to figure out this next act. And for me, this was about getting to know myself a little bit better and getting to know how people function a little bit better and kind of upgrading my attitude a little bit and becoming more open to what the universe had in store for me. And ironically, even though I started out thinking, well, I could stay in the movie business, but I could go and do something else, ironically, coming off of this experience where I started to think more in terms of people issues rather than story issues or script issues or budget issues, I got pulled back into the business working for DreamWorks Animation for most of the 2000s, but doing very different kinds of stuff. I was involved in people and leadership initiatives, working with school outreach, and it led me into this second act career in education and training, which I have been pursuing for the last 7 years, co-running a graduate program here in Los Angeles for the satellite program for Carnegie Mellon, which is, you know, is based in Pittsburgh. But in the middle of all this, as I was kind of keeping up on the news, I began to become aware in the wake of the recession of how the late career and retirement picture had changed for baby boomers, and how, as you were talking before in your intro, this idea that you get a good education, this entitles you to work for 40 years, and if you keep your nose clean, you get to retire. And the realization that this was over, particularly in the wake of the recession, a lot of people woke up, found that they had lost 30, 50% of their retirement savings, the value of their homes had gone down, or many people were underwater, and all of this kind of blue sky, everything's going to be okay attitude that we had just kind of, you know, fell off. So I thought, well, what are we going to do about this? And I was asked to do a TEDx talk on the subject of transformation. And I thought, oh, here's a perfect opportunity to talk about this question. If we're all unsure about the future of Social Security and entitlement programs and whether the social safety net is really there for us, it means that we're going to have to take care of ourselves somehow. And if we're not going to blame someone else for our misfortune, that means we're going to have to take responsibility for moving forward. So what do we do? So I came up with this set of five steps to reinvention. And that's what I talk about, and that's what I wrote my book about.
No, it's interesting. And one of the reasons that I've started following you on Twitter, and I was like, man, he's really on to something, John, because I think people really need a wake-up call. You know, it's like,
I agree.
You know, people are still, I call it back to the future, right? So, in fact, this shift to what I call this new financial normal has been going on for the past two decades, right? So,
I agree.
Started when they started, you know, 401ks. We were like, oh, isn't that wonderful? We have our own 401ks. No, they started shifting the risk of our retirement to us as individuals.
That's
and
right.
Most people were not prepared to A, really know how to invest those dollars. And so to right. your point, when the market went down, people sold at the worst possible time. And now here we are, the market's at a high. And what I'm seeing is many people never went back into the market. So they're not going, they haven't, you know, taken advantage of it. And to right. your other point was in terms of housing, you know, I'm hearing housing is at all times high. And yeah, in certain segments like Portland and Seattle on the West Coast, but many people are still underwater. Their homes still have not yeah. recovered from that 2008 recession. Let me just let our listeners and our viewers know, because I'm also simulcasting this over Periscope on Twitter. If you're just joining us, I'm Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach, and my conversation in the second half of Wealthy Radio's with John Tarnoff, and we're talking about his own reinvention as a reinvention career coach, and he is author of Boomer Reinvention, How to Create Your Dream Career Over 50, a modular, practical, accessible program of 5 steps and 23 underlying career strategies. And we'd love to hear from you this evening. Perhaps you're listening to this program and you are someone who is either in transition, knows you need to transition because you're looking around, and that's what I really encourage people to look at the tea leaves and see which way they're going so that you can already be prepared to position yourself. The phone number to call, 410-319-8888, if you want to join in this conversation, or you can send a tweet, ask the question on Twitter, that's at Deborah Owens. You can also follow John Tarnoff, my guest, at John Tarnoff. That's T-A-R-N-O-F-F. And we'd love to hear from you. Or perhaps you're someone who did reinvent yourself and you just want to weigh in. The phone lines are open, 410-319-8888. We're talking about what you need to do to thrive in what is a pretty dynamic economic environment, but we cannot be fearful. We have to embrace change. So let's talk about how you developed these five. Where did the 5 strategies come from? Was it something that you kind of saw in your own life and have been able to duplicate it with some of your other coaching students, or how does it work?
Sure. Well, it does come from this whole set of experiences that I've had staying afloat in a very unstable industry.
Yes.
And so I look at my career over those 35 years from when I started in the mid-70s to when I left DreamWorks in 2010. So I had 18 jobs over those 35 years, a little less than 2 jobs per year. In most businesses, that's kind of a dicey career record. In entertainment, it's like, yeah, so what? Everyone gets tossed around a lot. So I realized that I had a certain resilience that I had built up, that I'd learned how to recover from those changes, and that I had some tips and tricks to offer to people around that, coupled with the work that I had done in my psychology degree and really understanding some of the ways in which we think and the ways in which we can change our belief systems and pivot to new paradigms and new ways of supporting ourselves through change.
Oh, I absolutely love that resilience, because that, my friend, I believe is the secret to turning your setbacks into successes. It really is resilient, not yeah. getting, you know, fearful, and understanding right. that through each of those trials, you're simply going to get stronger for it. What I would say, yeah. though, John, is you were already, the career and the industry that you chose already prepared you to be resilient.
Yes, I think that's true. But I think that one of the strengths that older workers have is that they may not really be aware of, is that if you've survived in your career through 2-3 decades, you've got a lot of the tools already through that experience to be able to get through this next second act shift into your final phase.
Absolutely.
Don't underestimate what you've got. A lot of people do.
I love that. You know, I did a newsletter just talking about that in relation to women saying that, oh, I don't know numbers. And when in fact you know more than you think you do. But I want to go to these phone lines. Again, the phone lines are open 410-319-8888. If you're just joining us, I'm Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach. And my conversation in the second half is with John Tarnoff. He is the author of, let me just pull that up, Boomer Reinvention, How to Create Your Dream Career Over 50. Let's go to these phone lines. Let's go to, I'm having some technical difficulties. I'm going to have to ask the engineer, can you pull that caller up for me?
What's the name?
The first, Donna.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Donna, you're on the air. I'm sorry, I'm having a question or comment for us.
Question now, when the economic bubble hit and everybody, things happened, a reason why a lot of the people didn't go back to work was because, you know, a lot of it was age discrimination, so their chances of being able to go back in that same career was, you know, didn't look too good because a lot of the employers started looking at the age, you know, if you're over 40, they started looking at your age and you're overqualified and things like that.
Okay, you know what, Donna, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Ask your question. I'm going to let you take it off the air. Go right ahead. Oh, no, I wanted her to ask the question. Go ahead, Donna. Ask the question.
Oh, my question is, how can you get beyond, you know, the issue of, you know, when they downsize and recreating a new career that does not affect you by age? Because a lot of times age is still an issue in a lot of these employers.
That's a great question.
Right. And I'll have to listen. Thank you.
Yeah, how do you deal with ageism? Because it's real.
You know, it's very real. It's very real, and it's a huge problem. I think, we say that ageism is the last ism. And people don't even realize that they're being ageist because they have this assumption that, well, aren't you getting older? Or don't you have some place to go? aren't you feeble-minded now that you're 60?
Didn't you plan properly?
Right, exactly. So we can't educate everybody right now, unfortunately. I think we're doing a good job of that, but I think practically speaking, and I talk about this to a good extent in my book.
Okay.
And permit me to say something a little bit outrageous. You're going to kind of, Donna, you're going to think.
No, definitely be outrageous.
I'm being a little bit flip about this.
Okay.
But my advice is that you've got to roll right over it. You know, people are going to be ageist out there. You've got to find the people who aren't ageist. And you've also got to make sure that you are updated and upgraded in terms of the kind of job that you are going for. One of the mistakes I think people do make is when they try to apply for a job that they've just been fired from. And if you're a hiring manager, you're going to want to hire someone who is you, but 10 years ago and 10 years cheaper.
Yes.
And I think it's time for a lot of us to kind of upgrade. Take this opportunity to upgrade our sights about what we can do. Apply all of the wisdom that we have learned and earned in our career and go for something which is greater and something that is really providing a lot of value based on the wisdom that we've acquired. Now, the way to go about doing this is through your network. And I'm going to just say, if you think you're going to apply with a resume and get a job by sending out a resume, you're wrong. You need to build a network of people who get you, who understand you, for whom your age doesn't matter. And they're going to network you to the opportunity that fits what you offer.
That's great advice. You know, I saw this statistic, and one of the things that it said, that particularly around your networks, that it's not necessarily someone that you know personally who's going to hire you. It's someone that you know that knows someone else, right?
That's
so it's
right.
Kind of like those fringe connections. And, you know, I follow you. So I started following you on Twitter. Then I started looking at your work on LinkedIn. And I think for boomers and people over 50 that they need to upgrade their use of technology and position themselves for success.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you're saying that, so one of the tips in your book around boomers after 50 finding that next opportunity, you said wisdom and you also said upgrade. So is that upgrading your skills and your use of technology and the skill sets that employers want?
It is all of it. It is, but it's first of all, it's upgrading your sense of what you can do and what kind of a difference you can make. And also, you got to kind of take a look now, take the long view of everything you've learned in your career to this point and go, how can I best apply that in a way that's going to make me happy every day when I go to work, but also be useful to some market niche out there? You know, it may be in my field. It may be applying what I've learned in my field to another field. It may be teaching people, mentoring people. It may be supervising a new set of people in these skills that I've learned. The opportunities, I think, are very, very great.
But you have to adapt to it. It's not like this is an economy that rewards your ability to create value, but you also have to be able to convey how you create that value too.
That's right.
And it's not necessarily going to come up off of a page. You've got to get in front of people and really be able to sell yourself.
Right.
Again, the phone lines are open, 410-319-8888. We're talking about boomers turning their setbacks into successes with John Turnoff. I'm taking your calls, 410-319-8888. You can also post a question on Twitter or on my Facebook page. That's the Deborah Owens page. Please follow me on both of those platforms so you'll know what kind of resources we have coming up on Wealthy Radio. You can also sign up for our newsletter on DeborahOwens.com so that you will know what topics are next. Again, the phone lines are open, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Cheryl, who's been holding patiently. You're on the air, Cheryl. Question for us?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Dr. Dunstan, and I want to comment about taking our setbacks and turning them into successes.
Okay.
As a 60-something-year-old Black African-American woman, my setback was drugs and alcohol, and I'm not ashamed of that. And what I have done is not only do I have a 15-year of personal experience with drugs and alcohol, I now have 33 years of being clean and sober, working in the field. And so having that personal experience of going back to school to educate myself as well, to integrate my personal experience in education to be successful at what I do and to engage with others. So I just want to make a comment that as women, we all have a story to tell. And I would say take your pain and turn it around and use it as a stepping stone and educate yourself about that. Bad relationships, domestic violence, drugs and alcohol, being a grandmother, taking care of your children's children. There is a lot in our personal life that we can educate ourselves about and use it as a stepping stone to be successful. And it's never too late to go back to school and to educate yourself.
I love that.
That's great.
I love
that's
great. That. John, you want to comment?
I would just say I think that's phenomenal. I so appreciate you pointing that out. And for me, it goes to this idea that in perfect vulnerability, there is perfect strength.
And
we need to stand tall and transparent in our vulnerability because people will look up to us for our willingness to be authentic and to be transparent, and that is a wonderful way to attract all sorts of valuable people to you, is by standing up in who you really are and not hiding that.
Yeah, and I mean, what I think is even more profound in what Cheryl just said is it is sometimes those challenges that we are trying to overcome ourselves where we can add the most value, right? And so may be that thing that you're struggling with, as she said, you know, drugs or alcohol. It's so interesting. I was just listening to an interview on NPR, and it talked about how these gentlemen who are coming out of jail and they have some kind of mental health issue. And so now what the state, I think it was Kentucky, has done is they've made all these peer counselors, and these peer counselors are all people who have had those same kind of issues. And so they've cut down on recidivism because those peer counselors become someone that men coming out of, men or women coming out can now relate to them better. Whereas in the past, they were actually going to psychologists or mental health professionals, and they weren't as successful because they didn't relate.
Right. That's great.
And so in your book, Boomer Reinvention, just, I know that I have a lot of friends or colleagues who feel like they're at a disadvantage because they're getting older. What are some common mistakes that you think people are boomers in particular are making that could be obstacles that they're actually putting in front of themselves?
Right. Well, I think we've touched on some of them. The top three mistakes that I talk about are this idea of, one, that your resume is not going to get you a job.
Yes.
That you really have to focus on building a network. And that building a network is not just, you know, having a bunch of people in your phone that you can call. It's really understanding how to divide that contact list into the people who can help you most closely, those people who are really close to you, kind of a board of directors group where these are the people that you can really sit down with and have heart-to-heart conversations with. And then you got to identify the people who you already know who have some kind of value, and then the people who you've just met, you know, or who you want to meet, who are working in areas where you want to be working, who've got advice that you want to get. But the most important aspect of networking to me is this idea that you always have to be giving. It's not about asking people for help. It's about your willingness and your resourcefulness in finding out how you can help them first, whether it's through supplying information or referring an article to them, introducing them to someone, posting some interesting information from your background. This goes to the question about vulnerability and using your experience. You really want to start by sharing authentically as a way of drawing people in, and then they'll start offering to help you.
Yeah, you know, that it's so interesting. When I do workshops on networking, John, that's one of the points that I make. Like when you go and go in a room, don't look at a way where you can meet somebody, introduce them yourself and what you do. It's really the other way around, right? It's finding out about that person and really asking them, well, you know, how can I be of service to you? This is what I do. What are you trying to do? And it's really the whole premise of filling the well before you draw from it, right?
Right.
And not only that, but not only before you draw from it, but also I believe that it's that habit of adding value, right? And so that whole principle of reciprocity can work so much in your favor if you just approach it from that standpoint.
Right. Absolutely. I also think that it's in this stage of life, you know, we used to think of the three stages of life as being education, career, and retirement. I think, you know, you got to realize that education is lifelong.
Yes.
So the first stage of your career really is self-awareness. And I tell this to my grad students all the time. You got to know who you are. And then your career is about creating. It's about delivering value. But then the third stage of the career where we are now is about giving back.
Yes.
So I think if you start from a position of giving back, in terms of the networking that you do and drawing all of those years of experience and stories and wisdom that you've got and focus on how do you give this back, then you will be rewarded multifold.
Excellent. Well, John, that music is playing. That means, gosh, this was a quick half hour. Please let our listeners and our viewers know how they can get in contact with you.
Easiest way is to check in on me on my website, which is johntarnoff.com. And there's contact information there.
Excellent. And they can follow you on Twitter. That's at John Tarnoff. Right?
Yep. Yep.
And you're on LinkedIn. You're on LinkedIn as well.
LinkedIn as well, at John Tarnoff on LinkedIn. So, absolutely.
Perfect. John Tarnoff, thanks so much for coming in and sharing Boomer Reinvention Strategies. Okay, that's going to do it for us this evening, folks. Thanks so much for listening to Wealthy Radio. You remember, if you've got a question or a comment for future topics, please go to DeborahOwens.com. We'd love to hear from you. Follow me on Twitter. That's at Deborah Owens. Follow me on Facebook. That's my Facebook fan page, Deborah Owens page. Of course, a shout out to our engineer, Andre Shelton, and our producer, Essence Mosley. That's going to do it for me this evening. Have a prosperous week, everybody, and good night.